I'm Tracy Sable. Tonight on EWTN News Nightly, health of the Holy Father. Pope Francis remains in critical condition as he spends another day in a Rome hospital. We have the latest. 3 years later, a look at where things stand on the anniversary of the war in Ukraine. And take a look at this. Learn more about an exciting new art exhibit at the Vatican. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us. Our top story tonight, Pope Francis slept well on his 10th night at Rome's Gemelli Hospital, where he is being treated for double pneumonia. EWTN Vatican News correspondent Colin Flynn has the latest update from the Holy See Press Office.
Good evening, Tracy. A bit of good news. While Pope Francis remains in a critical condition, he does show signs of slight improvement. That from the Vatican's latest update. The statement says that the Holy Father did not have an asthma crisis today and that, quote, some laboratory tests have shown an improvement. The doctor said that they are monitoring his mild kidney failure, but at the moment it is of no concern. The Pope continues to get oxygen therapy, but this too has been slightly reduced. And just like in previous days, Tracy, the doctors have said that, quote, due to the complexity of his clinical picture, they do not have a prognosis. That is to say, where the Pope's health is likely to go from here. Now, this statement from the Vatican concluded with a note that the Pope received the Eucharist this morning, while in the afternoon he resumed his work activities, although they did not say what those activities were. They also stated that this evening he called the pastor of Gaza Parish in Palestine to express his fatherly closeness to the people there. The Vatican said that Pope Francis thanked all of God's people who have gathered to pray for his health in the recent days. Well, as you can imagine, this recent update that the Pope's health has improved slightly, even though still critical, is a relief for all of those who have been following this story closely. Prayers and well wishes have been flowing in from around the world. And over the weekend, pilgrims gathered outside the Gemelli Hospital to pray and hold vigil for the Holy Father. Also, Mass has been celebrated inside the hospital each day in a chapel downstairs, which has been offered for the recovery of Pope Francis. And tonight, here in St. Peter's Square in Rome, Cardinal Pietro Parolin, the Vatican Secretary of State, led a crowd of pilgrims and faithful in praying the rosary for the health of the Pope. Well, that is the latest update for now, as Pope Francis remains in Gemelli Hospital here in Rome. Colm Flynn for EWTN News Nightly.
And we continue to pray for the Holy Father. EWTN News asked President Donald Trump and French President Emmanuel Macron for their messages to Pope Francis. We caught up with the two leaders as they met today at the White House on the third anniversary of the war in Ukraine. Trump is pushing for peace, saying that it could lead to World War III if it's not solved. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports. Owen.
Good evening, Tracy. Today, President Trump called President Macron a very special man. The two leaders gathering here at the White House covering a range of topics, of course, including the war in Ukraine. But before we get to that, let me share with you my interaction with President Trump and President Macron regarding Pope Francis.
President Trump, do you have a message for Pope Francis, sir, who's still in the hospital? Do you have a message for Pope Francis, sir?
We wish him well. We want him to get well. It's a very serious situation, but we do want him to get well. That's possible.
President Macron, do you have something to say to the Pope?
Sorry, I didn't hear you. Oh, please. Yes, no. We do think about the Holy Pope, and we wish him a recovery and a prompt recovery. Thank you so much.
And later, meeting in the Oval Office, President Donald Trump and French President Emmanuel Macron take questions, including one about the proposed mineral deal the U.S. wants to arrange with Ukraine, and whether America would offer security guarantees in return.
Well, it'll be Europe is going to make sure that nothing happens. I don't think it's going to be much of a problem. I think once we settle, there's going to be no more war in Ukraine, and you're not going to have it's not going to be a very big problem.
After their closed-door meetings concluded, Trump and Macron held a joint press conference in the East Room.
But I think it's very much to the benefit of this tremendous distrust on both sides. That's why it's good that I'm coming in now. But I think it's to the very much benefit of Russia to make a deal.
But my experience is the following, and I shared it with President Trump and the team. In 2014, our predecessors negotiated peace with President Putin.
But because of the lack of guarantees, and especially security guarantees, President Putin violated this peace.
World leaders also gathered in Kyiv today to mark the anniversary of the war. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky says he wants the fighting to end, but Russian President Vladimir Putin makes it difficult.
This year should be the year of the beginning of a real, lasting peace. Putin will not give us this peace. He will not give it to us in exchange for something. We must gain peace with strength, wisdom, and unity.
Zelensky's deputy also talked today about the path to peace.
And there is no other choice for us but to end this war with the courage of our people, with the resilience of our nation. And the president is at the forefront of this struggle.
Russian President Vladimir Putin has suggested that European countries could be a part of a settlement. Meanwhile, President Trump believes a critical minerals deal with Ukraine is close. About $180 billion in American aid has been sent to Kyiv since the start of the war. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
All right, thank you, Owen. After 3 years, the numbers and cost of Russia's war in Ukraine are staggering. Nearly $300 billion have been spent by the U.S. and its allies, more than 150,000 lives lost, and over 10 million people displaced. So is Congress ready to dole out more money to fund Ukraine's efforts? For the latest on that, let's check in with Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales. Eric.
Well, good evening, Tracy. Since the start of the war, support has gradually tapered off up here on Capitol Hill, especially among Republicans. According to the State Department's own figures, the U.S. has spent more than $69 billion to provide military assistance since Russia invaded Crimea in 2014. And some are saying enough is enough, including House Speaker Mike Johnson.
We have to bring it to an end, and I can tell you that our European allies understand the necessity of this as well. It's drug on too long. The Ukrainians have suffered great losses. We have to bring an end to the conflict. President Trump is exactly right. It's time for it to end, and he is the brute force, I think, that can make that happen.
Other Republicans say funding needs to continue.
The war in Ukraine needs to end, and Russia needs to be expelled from the country. So I hope it ends soon, but we've got to provide him what he needs. And you don't win a war by being on defense.
At this time, Russia controls nearly 20% of Ukrainian territory, while Ukrainian troops have only taken some 460 square miles of Russia. Missouri Senator Josh Hawley says the previous Biden administration told lawmakers that a battlefield victory by Russia or Ukraine was not going to happen, and a negotiated settlement was a must.
They knew it. They just didn't have any way to do it. They had no plan for it. They were just bumbling along. President Trump, to his credit, realizes what has to happen here, and he's trying to bring the parties together to negotiate. And it needs to include the Europeans.
Zelensky and Trump, they're taking the roles of good cop and bad cop, trying to really coerce Ukraine solely to making secessions while not dealing with Russia itself.
President Trump blasted Ukraine's President Zelensky last week as an unpopular dictator who needed to cut a quick peace deal or lose his country.
All this is insulting and alienating our European allies, too, and kind of the rejection of NATO and this cozying up to Putin with the phone call saying he wants him back in the G7, G8, saying they're going to visit each other.
And just last week, members of the Foreign Relations Committee visited Ukraine to show their support. Ranking member Senator Jean Shaheen said that they saw firsthand how Ukraine is holding the Russian military at bay at the gates of Europe. And funding must continue in order to ensure Ukraine has a place at the negotiating table. At the Capitol, Eric Rosales, EWTN News Nightly.
While some U.S. lawmakers have visited Ukraine recently, it is President Trump's seeming change of attitude that is raising red flags among some church leaders. In an interview with EWTN's In Depth, his Beatitude Sviatoslav Shevchuk has a message for the administration.
Even from the U.S. side, we detect some clear messages of the Russian propaganda. So we would like to invite U.S. politicians to come and visit us in Ukraine. Not to believe in the Russian propaganda, even transmitted during the official meetings. Please come and touch down the reality in Kyiv.
But Major Archbishop Shevchuk says that he hopes the peace negotiations and settlement include two main elements.
In order to find a path toward a peace, healing, reconciliation, we have to have those two wings, truth and justice. Without truth and justice, there is no authentic peace. Let us be those blessed who will be a peacemakers, and they will be called son and daughter of God.
And for more now, we turn to Father Serhii Zakharchenko, a Ukrainian Catholic priest. Father, thank you so much for your time today. We really appreciate it. As we mark this three-year anniversary of the war in Ukraine, what sticks out the most to you?
Thank you for the invitation and for this opportunity to share our experience. It's not just only for me, but I for sure can say that I express the feelings and the situation of many people in Ukraine. For sure, it's a very difficult time. Although we can say that in some period of time, we're a little bit accustomed to what is happening. For instance, almost every night, it's very rare that during the week, one or two or three days, there is no air defense alarm in Kyiv, in the capital of Ukraine. And almost midnight, we have kind of fireworks, we call it, because drones or rocket shelling is just happening every night.
And since there's this renewed hope that a peace deal can be reached and hopefully an end to the war soon, I want to get your thoughts on that. And how important is it that peace come to your area?
It's very important because nobody expected that. You know, we knew from the history, we knew from the Second World War, or in other words, that happened in the past within last 100 years. And now we have it live. So we live in the time when we not just heard about that. We live in the time when we are the witnesses of the war. So that is why we can compare life before war and life during the war.
Father, let me ask you this. How important is faith, our Catholic faith, especially during a time like this, like during the wartime for Ukrainians? How important is it to lean into our faith?
It's very important. It's even much more important, and there is lack of words. I got transferred half a year ago from Poltava to Kyiv, and when we said goodbye to each other, me and parishioners, many people just was grateful for one thing, although it was also difficult for me, and not just for me, but for other priests. We were talking about that. And people were grateful that we, as oblates, as a priest, stayed in Poltava because it's 140 kilometers from, it's 100 miles from Kharkiv, and it was quite dangerous. They were grateful that we stayed in the city, in the parish, and that we were together.
Well, Father, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us from Ukraine. We appreciate it. God bless you, and we're praying for you all.
Thank you, and God bless you too.
And it looks like Ukraine has just gained an even stronger supporter in the European Union's largest country. Germany's mainstream conservatives, led by Friedrich Merz, won the country's national election. Among the challenges at the forefront, an anemic economy and the war in Ukraine. Merz is promising to unite Europe in the face of challenges both the United States and Russia. According to him, Europe needs to, quote, achieve independence from the United States. Well, there is a deepening divide between the U.S. and its European allies over the war in Ukraine. Earlier today, the U.N. General Assembly refused to approve a U.S.-backed resolution that urged an end to the war without mentioning Moscow's aggression. Instead, it approved a European-backed Ukrainian resolution demanding Russia immediately withdraw its forces, which the Trump administration opposed. And for more, let's bring in Rick Della Torre, Senior Vice President at Continental Strategy and a retired CIA Senior Operations Officer. Rick, good to see you again. On one side, President Trump is pushing for a normalization of relations with Russia and really curtailing aid to Kyiv. And in doing so, it seems he's really angered European and Ukrainian leaders by sidelining them in negotiations with Russia over the war. I want to get your thoughts on that, and how do you think this will all play out?
Thank you for having me. Look, I don't think tough talk in this case, tough talk isn't weakness, right? It's leverage. And Trump's negotiation style forces results, not endless conflict. I think the media and the foreign policy establishment misunderstand Trump's strategy. He uses leverage unpredictably. And that direct pressure does tend to get results. You know, we tend to forget that it was Trump who successfully pressured NATO allies to increase defense spending during his first administration. So these thoughts of that somehow Trump is abandoning the Ukraine, I don't think that's true. I think he just wants to make sure that America isn't the only one flipping the bill in this case, right? And by shifting and changing the policy and the negotiation tactics, I think now you're seeing some of the results where Europe is now starting to step up. We need to make it clear that European partners need to act like a real alliance and in some cases not a charity case where American taxpayers are expected to flip the bill.
Yeah, let me ask you this, though, Rick. Do you think that Ukraine can stand up to Russia without U.S. support? Where do you think that will go?
Well, it's been 3 years and hundreds of billions of dollars in, right? And we haven't really seen much of a shift or much of a gain. And part of that is because over the last 4 years, we really haven't had diplomatic off-ramps, right, for either Russia or Ukraine to start having those discussions and negotiations. It's unsustainable. I mean, it's certainly unsustainable from our pocketbook. We're at $35 trillion in debt. This is solely still a European issue. We will honor our commitments, I have no doubt, regarding NATO alliances, and an attack on one member is an attack on all. And we will do what we need to do to support and help our NATO partners. But Europe needs to burden more of the financial costs, the military costs, in regards to providing equipment to Ukraine. It's a David and Goliath situation between Russia and Ukraine.
Yeah, and do you think that we can, you know, bring peace to that region? I know the Europeans have stressed that, you know, the end of the war wouldn't mean Ukraine's complete surrender to Russia. Do you think that's possible?
Yeah, I don't buy that. I don't think somehow a negotiated peace means that Ukraine gives up its sovereignty or anything like that. I don't see any evidence of that at all. I think the other option is what? A forever weak war? Where skirmishes just continue on and on and on with no real objective to end the violence. Ultimately, I think it seems clear Ukraine is ready for peace. I think this has cost a lot more than what Putin had originally anticipated. This was not an easy weekend objective for him. It's 3 years later. And perhaps now the parties are ready to get serious and to start looking at coming up with some new peace deal that should be able to maintain itself.
All right, we're going to leave it there. Rick, thank you so much. Appreciate your insights. We appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And we have a lot more still to come here on EWTN News Nightly, including a tragedy in Africa. Reaction after violence in the Democratic Republic of Congo takes the lives of women and children and the elderly. And the latest on Elon Musk's Doge push to overhaul the federal government and reduce its size. Welcome back. reaction is pouring in following an email for federal employees to explain their recent accomplishments to Elon Musk, the head of Doge. Over the weekend, Doge sent out an email requesting that all federal employees submit 5 tasks that they accomplished over the last week by midnight on Monday. Multiple media outlets are now reporting that the Office of Personnel Management informed federal agencies that responses to the email are considered voluntary. Now, federal workers are suing, saying that Musk has violated the law by sending the email. Efforts are part of President Trump's efforts to overhaul the federal government and reduce its size. And joining us now to discuss this and more is Cynthia Ajello, employment attorney with the Ajello Law Group. Cynthia, good to be with you. So what do you make of this lawsuit by the federal employees in response to that email? And do you think they have a good case?
I don't think that they have a good case. I think that, you know, they have no damages, usually something that you are required to prove. It was an email. They're trying to make the government workers accountable for what they're allegedly working on. And, you know, I think it was a good move. And if they don't answer it, there's nothing, there's no threat to them if they don't answer it.
Yeah,
and only upside if they do.
Yeah, and President Trump was asked about this. You probably heard this afternoon by some reporters, and he said, you know, he thought it was great, adding that Musk was just really asking people if they're actually working. That said, it is causing anxiety and confusion for a lot of people. Multiple outlets are now reporting that the Office of Personnel Management informed federal agencies that responses to the email, as you mentioned, are voluntary. So talk to us a little bit more about this turn of events and really what it all means.
So, I mean, you know, I think that the government and Elon Musk and they're trying to just get some accountability from the workers. They're getting a salary. They should have to explain what they're doing to earn that salary. And, you know, answering an email, and if they're accomplishing things, then why not brag about them?
Yeah. Cynthia, you know, this isn't the first time a U.S. president had a plan to cut waste and fraud and reduce the size of government. I mean, about 3 decades ago, President Bill Clinton, he set out to do the same thing. So why do you think, you know, Doge is getting so much blowback?
I think that it's partially because it's coming from this administration and not the Clinton administration or even the Obama or the Biden administration. I think it's because it's coming from Trump himself and his, you know, people that he has appointed.
Yeah, and Cynthia, you know, a lot of people, and you probably heard this too, are going back and forth, really, and talking about the constitutionality of Doge. Help us kind of parse that out. I mean, what do you think the future could hold?
I mean, I think that asking for a cut down in waste and expenditures and things like that, I think that the Constitution actually provides for that. So, you know, to have the government actually doing their job and having an entity in place such as Doge that's going to hold people accountable and it's going to actually do what the Constitution says, I don't think there is any argument that it is an unconstitutional entity.
Well, Cynthia, thank you so much for coming on. We really appreciate it.
Thank you very much for having me.
Well, Israel says the release of hundreds of Palestinian prisoners is delayed until the release of the next hostages has been assured. Some family members wanted as more than 600 Palestinians were said to be released after the handover of 6 Israeli hostages on Saturday. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu called for an end to the Israeli hostage release ceremonies while criticizing them as cruel and demeaning. Hamas is accusing Israel of violating the ceasefire deal. All right, turning now to the Democratic Republic of Congo, where locals are calling for prayers after around 70 people were found beheaded inside of a church. The victims included children, women, and the elderly. Aid to the Church in Need International says the attack was led by rebels from an Islamist terrorist group. Around 100 other people were held hostage, and many of them were later killed inside of a Protestant church. It is part of a mounting violence in the region. Residents say the only thing giving them hope is prayer, and we pray for them. Up next on EWTN News Nightly, Getting the Picture. One Ukrainian's visionary art takes center stage in Rome, plus a touching show of support for the Holy Father amidst his fight with pneumonia. An exhibition exhibition to commemorate the beginning of the war in Ukraine is in progress in Rome with the collaboration of the Vatican. Epic Reality is the title of the event that includes works by Ukrainian artist Ivan Marchuk. EWTN Vatican journalist Magdalena Valinska-Reedy has more.
On the third anniversary of the Russian invasion of Ukraine, the Vatican is hosting a special exhibition of one of Ukraine's best-known artists and leading representatives of contemporary art, Ivan Marchuk.
Marchuk is a genius of our contemporary world and is listed among the top 100 current geniuses by the Daily Telegraph. This alone is an extremely important business card.
After more than 200 exhibits on five continents, the 40 works on display at the Vatican is seeking once again to direct the world's attention to the still fighting Ukraine.
We thought about how we can present Ukraine and spirituality during this terrible time, and we believe that here, in the Holy See, is the most beautiful way to present this through art, through possibilities, to invite, organize an exhibition that represents contemporary Ukrainian art. And that's why we organized this.
Many Vatican representatives and diplomats from around the world attended the opening. Fit into a broader context, it united people from all countries around the contrasting ideas of beauty and suffering.
This event, you understand, is a great surprise for me. And when I found out, I was even shocked. In the Vatican? I'll have an exhibition in the Vatican? No one believed me. The news spread immediately across Ukraine, and voices began. Marchuk will exhibit in the Vatican. And so it happened, as they say. Here it is. I'm happy with the atmosphere here today. It was just at the highest level. I've never experienced anything like this, and I've had exhibitions hundreds of times. You must experience it.
The artist himself, at the opening, didn't hide his emotions over the scale of the event and the large crowd, ranging from diplomatic representatives to Vatican scholars and art lovers who attended the inauguration. The event presents a unique opportunity for the Italian and global audience to familiarize themselves with the art of the brilliant master. It is also a tribute on the international stage to the suffering Ukraine on the third anniversary of the brutal war and to showcase the extraordinary sensitivity of this nation through the displayed paintings. In Rome, Magdalena Bolinska-Riedi, EWTN News Nightly.
Our final tonight amid his time in the hospital and as the world watches the health of the Holy Father, a bit of good news came in a special delivery. All right, take a look at this. Beautiful Get Well cards, hand-drawn by children. Some featured creative illustrations, including drawings of the Pope and Blessed Carlo Acutis, one saying, quote, "Get well soon so I can hug you." Adorable. Well, I thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Tracy Sable. Good night, and God bless.